This episode is brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Harness powerful crop solutions using technology derived from nature. Products from the Acceleron BioAg brand are bioenhancers, primarily containing live microbial organisms. The products help promote increased nutrient and water availability for better yield potential. Acceleron BioAg product offerings are available for canola, wheat, corn, soybean, pulses, and more. Visit AcceleronBioAg.ca for product information and to view BioAdvantage trial results from growers like you. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. We're in the middle of Animal Health Week when Canada's veterinary community draws attention to a chosen message through an annual PR campaign, and this year's message of choice, vaccines save lives. For livestock producers, vaccination is one of those routine tasks just considered to be part of the job. But like in many businesses, there's an ever-increasing onus on producers not just to have the routine, but to make sure it's scheduled and followed. We're talking about the development of animal health protocols, and for that, we're joined by Canadian Cattleman Field Editor Piper Whalen. Piper, hi, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, let's start with the big idea behind animal health protocols. We're seeing more and more programs these days where beef is being marketed with certain expectations for cattle care already built in, like the VBP Plus program, or more recently, the CRSB program for sustainable beef production. But is that the only reason why a ranch or a feedlot would want to codify its health practices in this way?
I think programs such as those are certainly great incentives, but there's definitely reasons that could include cost, just making sure that you're getting the most efficient use out of your vaccination programs, as well as overall productivity, which begins with healthcare.
Now, with developing the protocols, I'm assuming the process isn't as simple as just reverse engineering a checklist of whatever it is that a ranch has already been doing.
Yeah, exactly. So the feedlot manager referenced in my article, Kristen Hunter at Buffalo Plains, she stressed that creating health protocols takes time. This could be in the time it takes to establish a relationship with your vet, or the time that it takes to really know your herd. So it's definitely not, reverse engineering. There's, I think, a lot of time and consideration that's important.
Mm-hmm. So to set up health protocols, where does one even begin? I get the impression that every ranch's needs aren't going to, are they going to fit into the cookie cutter, if there even is a sort of a cookie cutter approach to this task?
Yeah, I'd say there definitely isn't a cookie cutter approach, mainly because that goes back to knowing the needs of your herd, which is going to vary for so many factors. So a great place to begin is with the health and nutrition of the breeding female. And so that is where Kristen recommended that you start with your protocols about the vaccination time and frequency, the types that you're going to use, whether this depends on herd size and what you're really aiming to do. So that would be the best place to begin, but it definitely isn't one size fits all.
Mm-hmm. Now, apart from vaccinations, there's also everyday health tasks that a protocol has to address, like nutrition, livestock stress, handling, and so on. Now, in your article, the featured feedlot has come up with some specific protocols for some pretty specific situations. I'm thinking of, calves compromised in rollovers, extreme weather. It's interesting how much you have to think of to cover off in a protocol, in an animal health protocol for your operation.
Yes, absolutely. And with this feedlot, it's such a large feedlot. They're getting a wide variety of animals from ages to, like those specific situations that you said. And that's maybe not what a person would necessarily think of, that they have to have something specific for, animals coming in extreme heat or in a blizzard. But that definitely has to do with making sure that they're having a less stressful experience than that they get the right start to for their feeding experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there's not always going to be a veterinarian or a vet tech around, like on the feedlot in your article, but it's up to an operations employees to make sure the protocols get followed. Don't you need an experienced eye to make these sort of judgment calls about animal health?
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the main issues that Kristen focused on, especially how hard it is to train someone to have an eye for cattle, for example, and that is something that she works on at her feedlot very much so, to make sure that everybody's on the same page and that they're looking for the same items when they're checking pens. She said that, you know, there was a great quote, anyone can pull the obvious late ones. What she wants her employees to do is to be able to recognize the subtle signs of an animal who's getting sick. So to be experienced is key, and that was one of the things that she worked on about creating a booklet with all their protocols and making sure that everyone's on the same page and making sure that they have regular meetings just to know what's going on in all the different pens, what they're seeing, what they could be looking for differently.
Mm-hmm. Now, one more thing. The featured feedlot, again, in your article, has its own veterinary technician, Kristen, who's assigned to manage these herd health protocols. Now, in another article recently, you wrote about vet techs and the roles they could take on in the future. Is there an opportunity here maybe for vet techs to work more with ranchers on their health protocols, you know, within that aspect of the veterinary client relationship?
I'd say there's definitely a great opportunity there. Yes, looking back to that other article. In this case, I think Kristen is ideal in this position of feedlot manager with her veterinary technician background, because that's exactly what she's looking for. I think even if someone is just working with a feedlot or cow-calf operation, this is a great opportunity for them to bring that expertise into that aspect. I know that the vet-client relationship in official terms does often have to be with an actual veterinarian, but I think this is a great opportunity for a vet tech to bring their expertise in and provide some of these great opportunities to create efficient and consistent animal health protocols, whether it's with a feedlot or a cow-calf producer.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something we'll certainly be keeping an eye on in the weeks and months to come. Piper Whalen, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you again for having me.
Piper Whalen is a field editor for Canadian Cattlemen magazine. If you'd like to read more about animal health protocols, check out the September issue of Canadian Cattlemen. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Depending how often you check your spam folder, you've probably heard a lot about Bitcoin, the e-currency that can be moved between buyer and seller without a middleman or an intermediary like a bank or a broker. Some of the excitement around that idea has cooled off over the past year, even though a single Bitcoin will probably still fetch you a good used F-150. But if you're like most farmers, your ears might have perked up a little bit there at the idea of a data trail that tracks commodities from place to place without the help of middlemen. That's the record-keeping system behind Bitcoin. It's called blockchain, and players all across the agri-food business see opportunities there that don't involve an $8,500 coin. FarmTerio editor John Greek has been talking to several of those players, and he joins us now. John, welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave.
Now, I was really hoping to talk more about blockchain on the show with you a couple months back when we were discussing the whole idea of machine learning in agriculture. We'll get back to that, I hope, but let's start by getting a clearer idea of what blockchain is exactly.
Yeah, it's not necessarily compared to machine learning. It's a whole other another set of technologies, broad-based technologies that are probably going to have behind-the-scenes effects that are going to be significant throughout the food supply chain once it all eventually gets sorted through. So essentially, blockchain is a ledger. You can think of it like an accounting ledger or an Excel spreadsheet that contains data, but that data is hyper-secured through multiple storage points across the internet based on a bunch of very good security protocols. So what that means is that data can be relied on for transactions, and as well it can be traced and relied on for a historical record as well.
So in a business like commercial agriculture, where your commodity goes from the farm gate through transport, processing, distribution, wholesale, retail, before it even gets to the consumer, all the product data clear up and down the supply chain is available in this shared secure ledger online. Sounds like what we've been told consumers are asking for from farmers. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's really where some of the big thinking on this is. And I'm not sure that's necessarily going to be where that every consumer is going to want to do that, but once you have linked the data securely through the supply chain, then there is the potential to do that. So there are certainly companies that are looking at how to do that for various commodities, whether it could be grains or milk, or especially in the fruits and vegetable side.
Mm-hmm. Some companies are already in on it, like you said. I remember I was reading the other day about Louis Dreyfus setting up fully traceable orange juice for a retailer in the Netherlands. There's a nutrition company in Vancouver called Organo that's working with a company called Digital Skynet, if you can believe that. That's an interesting choice of name if you've seen any of the Terminator movies. They're using it to improve their supply chains using blockchain. Now, as you've written, though, IBM has been working for a while with the Nestle's and the Tyson's and the Walmarts of the world on blockchain systems.
Yeah, and Walmart is certainly one of the leaders on this. They, you know, they've been a leader in using, you know, digital tracking systems, RFID, and that sort of thing through their supply chains. But this would be another step for them as far as being able to automate the tracking of information through the supply chain securely, and as well to go right back to the source. Where that's needed, both from a potential farmer, a positive and a negative capacity.
Negative capacity, such as a food safety scare, that level of traceability could come in handy.
Yeah, that's right. And overall, when we can more quickly trace food that's an issue back to the source, it's a better thing. So if you think back, there was a romaine lettuce food safety issue in the spring.
Yes.
And it dragged on and dragged on before they could actually figure out where the source of it was. So the thought is that they would be able to trace something like that in hours or minutes instead of weeks, because there's this line directly back to the farm, or it could be a processing plant or some other point at which a contamination might have happened. Now there's other ways that this data flow could be an advantage. One example someone gave me when I was working on the article is that a coffee drinker in Toronto who really liked the coffee could either through a QR code or a website trace that coffee right back to the grower in say Colombia, and then with secure transactional systems they could then send a tip or a message or something right back to that grower. So, and then if you think that through in other ways, there could be more potential for direct payment to the originator of that food through that system as well. Maybe you don't have to rely on the middleman for payment options. And then one of the other issues in the grain sector is always the time of payment for your grain delivery. So currently you might deliver the grain, it gets graded, volume recorded on slips often, and it gets handed down, eventually gets recorded by a human into a system, which then gets passed on to accounting, who eventually pays the bill. If you have a secure transactional system from top to bottom, if some of those data collection points are automated, then technically you can, the payment could come through immediately through automated accounting system that once the transaction meets certain parameters.
Now, back at the farm gate, all the data that field equipment and milking robots have been gathering, that might have a home in blockchain also?
It could be. There are a lot of systems in the world right now that are trying to manage that data. Blockchain could help make it more secure and easily transactionable. So, for example, on the dairy farm, there are many dairy sensors coming to the market these days, and there'll be some rationalization in that market. But how do you take? You got a sensor that tells you one thing on your farm. And then so you've got a major software system that manages your milking system and other other cow data. How do you get that information together? Because those companies aren't necessarily always working together. So with some standardization and some trust built into the system based on a secure trusted system in between, there could be better sharing of some of that data. Right now there's a company that what they do is washing dairy data so it can be shared. So many companies send the data into that company and it gets spat out in a way that it can be shared. Yeah, there could be blockchain systems in between that could help you develop the trust or anonymous transaction abilities to make that data more valuable more quickly.
Of course, if you've also got feedback from further up the chain, that can be brought back also to the farm level. Hence the machine learning aspect of it.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is where the machine learning certainly could. Could come into it as well.
Now, lastly, just to bring it all back closer to home, farmers in your area have got opportunities to get involved in a blockchain value chain. What can you tell us about that system and how farmers can get in on it?
Well, there's a company that's based in Prince Edward County in Ontario, and they are essentially, it's run by people that have left pension plans, which have tried to use blockchain technology and to try to bring some of this to agriculture. They're testing a project under the company. It's called Grain Discovery, in which they're going to link fairly simply grain transactions in that area with some example farmers this year through a system that secures it through blockchain. So it's in its early stages, but they hope to spread it across Canada and then potentially around the world.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that story and many other related stories like it in the weeks and months to come. John Grieg, thanks very much for coming on Between the Rows.
No problem. Thanks, Dave.
John Grieg is the editor of FarmTerio. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. In case anyone thought we'd forgot about the elephant in the room this week, we're learning more now about what Canada has agreed to in the sequel to the North American Free Trade Agreement. We're definitely going to be talking more over the next few weeks about the impacts on supply managed sectors and others, but the agreement took nearly no time at all to have an effect on grain markets this week. To discuss that and more, we've got Phil Franz-Workington of Commodity News Service Canada on the line. Phil, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So here we have the USMCA, a deal where the U.S. gets expanded access to the Canadian margarine market, and there's concessions on grain grading. Right away on Monday, though, the impact looked to be from a jump in the Canadian dollar.
Yeah, I guess the Canola Council, for what it's worth, was they said they were pleased with the deal, as it will also remove tariffs on Canadian margarine moving to the U.S., so that could open the door for some more value-added trade on our part. But the Canadian dollar did jump sharply higher on the news, climbing above 78 cents yesterday for the first time in a while. And when the loonie goes up, canola usually goes down because the rising currency, that when the currency is stronger, that cuts into crush margins and makes exports more expensive for international buyers. So they want to pay less. Canola, it sold off as a result on the NAFTA-USMCA deal, but cooler heads are prevailing by Tuesday, and with the loonies easing off its initial jump, and canola is a bit firmer once again.
And in tandem with that, it looks like canola also got support this last week from the weather over clear across the prairies. That's taken a turn which caught a lot of canola crops still out on the field, am I right?
Yes, I saw that today, Tuesday, it's snowing in Calgary again, and it's just been a cool, wet fall, and it's never really been a large enough window of drier weather to allow producers on the fields. Most of the canola is off in Manitoba, with only the kind of later season crops like soybeans, corn, sunflowers left to go. But in Saskatchewan and Alberta, where they admittedly grow more canola to begin with, there is a large chunk still out there. The latest provincial reports showed about half of Saskatchewan's canola crop was still on the fields last week, while in Alberta, only 16% of canola was harvested as of last Friday. And the longer that harvest drags on, the more supportive it is for prices, as you know, the delayed harvest and weather leads to yield and quality issues and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, further south, we're also seeing production and stocks numbers coming out from USDA that they're more bearish, meanwhile, for both oilseeds and for grains.
Yeah, because whatever happens here in Canada, that is important, but we're always the small fish in the sea, and so whatever happens in soybeans, the larger oilseed markets, that'll, you know, give some direction for Canada. And they're looking at some pretty big crops down there this year with both soybeans and corn. Their harvests are about a quarter done, and yield reports are generally beating earlier expectations. And those big crops that they're expected in the States are coming after another large crop last year. With the USDA, they put out some quarterly stocks numbers last week. They showed supplies of both soybeans and corn looking rather burdensome even before the harvest.
And lastly, of course, there's still the trade fight going on between China and the U.S., and that's hanging over oilseed markets. But it looks like U.S. soybeans, at the very least, might be finding some new homes now.
Yeah, that whole situation with China and the U.S., that's, you know, it's not on the front pages anymore. They got more going on in the U.S., I guess, mm-hmm. and the NAFTA deal here as well. But it is ongoing. And it's showing no real signs of easing. Both countries keep topping up their tariffs, and soybeans are definitely in the crosshairs. But soybeans, they are still moving, but at a much lower price than they might have without the tariffs. Argentina, it's usually a competitor with the U.S. on the export front, but it had a bad crop of its own last year, and it's been importing U.S. beans in order to feed its own crush sector, and then they'll turn around and sell the oil and meal to China and elsewhere. So the tariffs, you know, they have cut into prices, but the soybeans, they're still moving, and so it's just a matter at what price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it was assumed that all these soybeans were going to find other places to go eventually. But as you say, it's a question of who's willing to pay to move them. Phil, thanks very much for your time, and thanks for being on Between the Rows.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Phil Franz-Workington writes for Commodity News Service Canada in Winnipeg. That's all we have for you on this week's episode of Between the Rows. We'll be back in a week's time with more coverage from Glacier Farm Media's network of publications. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard.
Today's program was brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Acceleron BioAg products harness the powerful technology of nature to release soil-bound nutrients, helping promote nutrient availability at the plant root. Accelerate crop performance with powerful bioenhancers, aimed at promoting nutrient and water uptake and improved yield potential. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.